This podcast is sponsored by the Music Player Network at musicplayer.com, the premier musician resource for keyboard players and beyond. Since the year 2000, the Music Player Network has been the go-to source for news and views on music technology, playing tips, and gigging help. The Keyboard Corner is one of the longest-running keyboard forums in internet history, with guitar, bass, drum, and numerous recording and music tech forums also on offer. Frequented by weekend warriors, manufacturers' representatives, and professionals alike, MPN provides an invaluable resource for any musician, and it's 100% free to sign up and use. Go to www.musicplayer.com to see for yourself.
Hello and welcome to the Keyboard Chronicles, a podcast for keyboard players at a gigging variety. I'm your host, David Holloway, and it's brilliant to be here as always with you. My podcasting brother-in-arms, Paul Bindig, is here with me. How are you, Paul?
I'm great. Thanks, David, and excited to be here again.
Yes, and we're both doing this on a Sunday night. I don't know about you, Paul, but it's raining like hell here, so it's nice to be inside doing something fun.
I love any time I spend with you, David, doing the podcast. So it could be rain, hail, snow, sleet, or blazing sunshine outside. But if I'm inside with you talking to our guests, I'm a happy guy.
Just looking around for the studio bucket. Where's the studio bucket? So no, it is good to be here. So this episode, it's not something different, but we're talking with Mr. Francis Capistrano. Now, Francis, as you'll hear, is a very experienced gigging keyboard player who's also spent more than a decade prior in the retail keyboard sales, in keyboard sales roles. So he's got, you know, lots of experience, you know, selling keyboards and playing keyboards for people coming in to buy them. So that alone makes him an interesting guest. But then there's the fact that he's also the brains behind Narf Sounds, which I think a lot of our listeners who play in cover bands will well and truly have heard of. So Narf Sounds are a company that sells sounds for a range of modern synths, covering a huge range of hit songs from pretty much all of the decades from the 60s onwards. I've lost count of the number of players I know that have used Narf Sounds, and I promise this is not a sponsored thing. I just, you know, we sought out Francis, so we're not being paid to say this. The amount of people that use Narf Sounds is incredible, and so I thought it'd be fun to talk to Francis about that and a lot more. So hope you enjoy it. All right. Francis, great to have you here on a Sunday night, and this is one of these rare all Aussie events. Great to have
you here. Hello, yeah. Nice to be here.
Really appreciate you joining us, and we're really keen to sort of delve into a few things with you. But we might as well kick off with our old chestnut of tell us about how you got into music initially.
Ah, okay. That goes a long way back to high school, I guess. So back in high school, I started off with a little Yamaha Portasound keyboard, and I joined my first high school band. There was a battle of the bands, and they asked me to join them. So back then I knew three songs. I knew Jump, Don't You Forget About Me, and what was the other one? Just a local one back in the Philippines. That's where I'm from. So yeah, so that was many years back, and that was in high school. And that was third year high school. Fourth year we played again, and next time we won. And when we graduated from high school, went on to uni, and we joined a battle of the bands amongst universities. And we won that, and we won some prize money. And we finally realized, hey, we can actually make money out of this. So that's how it all started. And we did weekly gigs in random pubs. We were doing a lot of 80s stuff. It was the early 90s, but we were playing, you know, the last remnants of the 80s. Because at that time, grunge was the in thing, but we were sort of, you know, we were stubborn. We didn't want to let go of the 80s. So that's where we started.
And so I'm seeing a pattern here already to do with topics we're about to talk about as far as the 80s stuff. So you literally playing in bands, cover bands in pubs at school. So what made you decide to sort of go into music as a career?
After we graduated from uni, we all started working, and that sort of disbanded the band. That was the end of it. And I worked in a hotel for a while, back in the Philippines, and they formed an employee sort of group. And I joined that, and one of the guys in the hotel actually managed the band, and I got to join that. So I was doing that part time, maybe once or twice a month. It wasn't very often. And when I moved to Australia much later on, I got to start working in retail in music retail, because I really found it hard to. I lived in WA for a while. And it was a little town called Busselton, and there wasn't much work for whatever experience I had. So one day I was just walking down the main road, and there was a sign, "Keyboardist Wanted," in the shop front, and I went in and got the job, and that's how it all started. And one day, one of the local musicians also walked in, and, "Hey, we need a keyboardist, and we need a guy to play in the band." So that's how it all started here in Oz.
Yeah, right. So
Yeah.
from the tiny town of Busselton in Western Australia for our
Yep.
international viewers and listeners. So very, very remote part of the country.
Yeah, beautiful spot, but
Oh yeah, I
quiet,
mean,
quiet.
Western Australia is an amazing part of the world, actually, for those who've visited. It's a remote, beautiful, rugged, wild and dangerous. From that start at Busselton, and we know you've had a long and successful career in music retail as well. How did that develop, and
Yeah,
how have you
so
found that?
I it was a little shop in Busselton, and being a small town, and during winter the place was dead. So eventually it closed down, and I got hired in the next town in Bunbury. I don't know if you're familiar with that. So it's slightly bigger, almost a city, Bunbury.
I've played Bunbury
All
before
right.
then. So yes,
Yep,
yeah,
yep.
great little
So
town.
it was a 55-kilometer drive from Busselton to Bunbury. And yeah, so it was a bigger shop, and eventually after 5 years we moved out of WA, became citizens, and moved to Melbourne, because this is where the music is. This is where the music is if you're in Australia. So working in retail, I knew all the suppliers were here this side of the country, and I always dreamed of maybe one day working for Chord or one of the big keyboard companies, because that's what I had back home. I had a Trio, and I had a Chord Triton studio, and yeah, we were doing that thing. So yeah, moved to Melbourne and ended up working for Allens and Billy Hyde when I first started. Yeah.
And I'm interested, Francis, that I know retail can be a challenging environment in music. Do you have any particular memories or anecdotes of some of the more fun or less fun times in selling keyboards to people?
Well, it was a lot of fun. You're never bored when you're in a music store if you're a musician. People always would walk in. You must be like a kid in a music in a candy store. And it's exactly what it felt like. And of course, it wasn't all fun and games. You don't just play the stuff, but you get the familiarity that you get with the keyboards is, yeah, you can't be beaten. So I knew a lot of the keyboards inside out. And I was lucky enough to work for a company called Keyboard Corner in Boronia here in Melbourne. And they were the top sellers for the Yamaha PSRs, and eventually the Chord Kronos. We sold a lot of them. And it was an easy sell, because anybody would walk in, you just showed how much you loved the thing, and it would pretty much sell itself. So it was a lot of fun for me. Because you know how sales is, the typical adage that it's a transfer enthusiasm, and that's all it was. You get a what do you want? What are we after for? What are you looking for? And they tell you, "Oh, we're after a keyboard for the sun." And then, yeah, this is what I can show you, and just
Yeah,
have fun with it, really. And it becomes infectious, and they buy essentially.
I think so, right? If you're enthusiastic about something, it will translate to your customers. I have to ask you, Francis, in your experience working in music retail, what's the number one song that people play on the keyboards when they're noodling and trying them out?
It used to be the Fur Elise, right? That used to be the in my early years in Interetal, that was what everybody played. But when that movie came out, the Twilight series came out, and there was a theme.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that everybody who walked in just played that song. And yeah, as much as tempting as it was to put up a sign, no fur leaves or no river runs through it. It helps sell the keyboard, so you don't stop people from doing that.
Of course not.
Yeah. But yeah, that was the common thing. I had my favorite demo songs, and they're the ones that I have in my pack. So, like Jump, of course, everybody loves that. One Vision by Queen. That's
Yes.
Yeah. And I'd always dial up a sound on the Kronos, the orchestra one. So you start off just playing softly, and then you just surprise them with all the timpanis and the big sounds.
Yeah, nice.
Play the Batman theme or the Superman theme or whatever.
That's great. And you've just mentioned the sound packs, Francis. So let's jump into that. How did NARF Sounds come about? Let's talk about sort of the origin. How did you go from retail to actually going into business for yourself?
As I was working in retail, I was also playing in bands. So the band that I'm in right now has been the band that I've been in since I moved to Melbourne, essentially. So it's been a while. I just answered an ad, and we started off playing pubs and graduated from that, and now we just exclusively do weddings. Anyways, working in retail and doing that. So when you play in a band, obviously you prepare your keyboard and get the sounds right. And that's always been my thing, was getting the sounds right for the song. You know, there's really two schools of thought when it comes to playing keys. There are the guys who play pure keyboards, just pianos, electric pianos, organs, claves, that's it. And maybe the occasional strings and brass. Mm-hmm. And they're the guys who play the original, you know, recordings, or as close to that as possible. So I'm of that school of playing, I guess. And every now and then the band would ask, okay, can we do this song? And you learn it, you program the sounds, and it doesn't get played. Hours go into actually getting the songs. Well, I ended up with lists of songs that never got played, or some that got played regularly but would get canned. One day I put up a video on YouTube, Uptown Funk, and I was getting a lot of messages, hey, can I buy the sound from you? And I tell them, not really, because the way I've organized my Kronos isn't the same as everybody else. My sounds are jumbled up. And, you know, if you play a Kronos, you know what it's like. You have to make sure that all the patches are in the right place. So it wasn't until I bought my Kronos Gold. So I bought a second Kronos eventually. And somehow I had to justify owning this thing, because the only reason I bought it was it was gold. So I'm a sucker for these these colored keyboards, and I just had
Korg,
to have it.
Korg are really clever like that too. They'll repurpose their keyboards in a completely different color and change nothing else.
So yeah.
Must work, right? Because they do it all the time.
It works on me. Yeah, honestly, it was the only reason why I bought one. The guys at the shop, because they knew I was a bit of a Kronos freak, and that was a Kronos 1. So eventually the Kronos 2 came out, and people were asking, why aren't you buying the Kronos 2? I already have the Kronos 1. I don't really need one, but if they come up with a gold one, I'll buy it. I'll be the first one to buy. And true enough, a few years later, they came out with a Kronos Gold. In fact, the guy who owned the business that I worked for gave me a ring while he was at NAB. Francis, they've got a Kronos Gold here. Do you want to get it? So he ended up buying all the Kronos Golds and bringing them in the country. And when it arrived, okay, take it home. That was it. And I was carrying this thing and setting it up, and my wife was looking at me, So, okay, maybe I'll sell some sounds.
And that's, and I think you've been a little bit modest there, Francis. I mean, obviously it would have started from small things, but I think it's fair to say, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but you'd have to be one of the preeminent sound providers for particular boards worldwide, wouldn't you? You'd be one of a small handful.
I guess. At the end of the day, I had the most time to do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a, And I already had a bit of a list when I started. And so I was doing this right after work. And how it started was, because I also run a Facebook group. Back when the Kronos was released, I was working for Allen's. I put up I was doing workshops in the shop itself. And it was called the Kronos Enthusiast Workshops. In Q, that's where the branch of Allen's Billy Hyde was. It was Allen's Billy Hyde Q. So we created this workshop thing called Kronos Enthusiast Workshops, KEWQ. And a Facebook group came out of that. And eventually Allen's closed down and that group went on. So when I started NARF Sounds, I just said, hey, I've got these cover sounds that I've got. Who wants to, you know, I've got 20 of them right now. In a few months, I'll have 50. And you can get them for X amount of dollars. And so people would just email me, whoever is interested, email me, and then I'll send you the link, and then I'll send you the PayPal and whatever. And eventually, this is too much work. And maybe I'll just do a landing page on and I just got a Wix website, and yeah, that's how it started. So it all automated, they can just download the file, and that was it.
And just give a bit of a brief overview about what you do offer now, because it is quite extensive. So just briefly cover the boards that you cover and sort of the broad sound sets you offer.
Sure. It started off with a Kronos, and so it started off with a Core Kronos, and I had to do two separate packs because the way the Core Kronos 1 and the Core Kronos 2 are arranged is different. So initially I had to arrange them so that it would be compatible for both machines. And I started off with what was called the Session Gig Collection, because that was that's what it was. It was a collection of songs that I used for my session gigs. And started off with that, and eventually I would build it up every few months, and people would email me, Francis, when can you do the sound or whatever, and I get enough requests for that particular song that okay, I'll do it. And then after the Kronos came the Montage, the Yamaha Montage. Mm-hmm. Back then, before I bought the Montage, I was Korg only. I wouldn't touch any other keyboards. And I went back to the Philippines and watched my friend, she played a concert, and her keyboardist was pretty amazing, and he had a Montage. So I got a Montage from the shop that I was working in. It was funny because the Montage that I had, my first Montage, was one that I had sold to a customer. But I sold a Kronos to the customer, but I wasn't around when he came in to buy. So he ended up buying a Montage. Somebody talked him into buying the Montage. A week later, he comes back, and no, I should have bought a Kronos. So he came back to me and got the Kronos, returned the Montage, and I ended up buying his Montage. That's how it started.
And so that's when you had to say to your wife, I'm now going to make more sounds.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I heard this guy in the Philippines, and I was amazed. And I checked out the Facebook groups, and there was a pretty healthy group on Facebook, and it was a really nice community. So I joined that. I got the keyboard. It took me a few months to actually learn the keyboard and get my head out of the Korg way and be open to the Yamaha way. As you know, if you've got a multiple keyboards or get used to one, it's really hard to transition to another. Yeah. You know, if you're a Korg guy, talk to any Korg guy and they're going to say, Yamahas are too difficult. And you talk to a Yamaha guy, Korgs are too difficult. It's because they term their words differently, and parameters aren't where you'd expect them. It's just a matter of getting used to. So it took me a while to do that. And I guess the most successful songs from my Kronos packs were the ones that came out on the Montage. And then a few months later, the Mode DX came out. And it was so successful. I mean, the Mode DX is such a successful board that a couple of months later, I quit my job, because the demand for the sounds had spiked. And I realized, you know, there are a lot of musicians who just want to save time. They just want to play. You know, especially if it's a gig upcoming, you know, 2 days from now, for instance. You know, you get that random call on a Thursday, and they want you to play on the Saturday. And they give you this massive list, and you don't even know where to start. So the first thing you do is you're going to have to learn what you think is going to get played. Because, you know, everybody knows they give you this list, but they're not actually going to play all that. And the last priority is getting the sound right. That's the last priority. I got to learn this song pronto, get it ready for the gig. But at the same time, you want to create a good impression to the band, with a band. You got to get the sounds right. You got to, you know, best foot forward sort of thing. And that was happening. And it was hard because I'd spend a lot of time just creating the sound. Plus, I'm going to have to learn the song and then actually perform the thing on the weekend. So, I realized people just want to play and get your mind off the programming and just play. And that's what the packs are all about.
And I think it's interesting. You're the first person I've heard that's verified just what I had as a gut feel that those Modi X, since, and I own the Modi X7, just really took off. It just appeared that everyone seemed to, you know, a lot of people gave them a go and they just love the sound set and how versatile they are for a pretty reasonable price. Yeah.
Well, the Kronos and the Montage, they're not cheap keyboards. They're not cheap instruments. So if you're doing this for the first time, you're probably not going to get one yet. It's one of those things. I got myself an Oasis back in the day, and you know how much the Oasis was in Australia, and because in the Philippines it was a pipe dream for me to even own one. It was impossible. It was not going to happen. It was a year's salary to own an Oasis, and even if you could afford one, there was no way you could justify owning one without having this guilt of owning it. So anyways, it just wasn't something that you get as a beginner. But the Modi X, Yamaha kind of broke the rules with that one, because there's this unspoken rule amongst manufacturers that your second tier keyboard can't be as good as your flagship. And when the Modi X came out, it was as good as the flagship, almost. It's just not built as well. But as far as the brains and the sounds and the controls and the functions go, it's pretty much a baby Montage, a smaller Montage. It even had the touchscreen. The interface was exactly the same. And most importantly, you could load Montage sounds in a Modi X. So, yeah, that's how it was.
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing feature of the Modi X, is the ability to, the compatibility with the Montage. Yeah,
and I've been telling, because I see it a lot. A lot of people actually upgrade from a Modi X to a Montage. Mm. So it's sort of your gateway drug to a better keyboard. And it's, that was a big win for Yamaha.
Yeah, Modi cool. So you mentioned, Francis, you got to a point where the demand was such that you quit your day job and focused on NAF sounds.
Yeah.
Building up the business, what have been some of the biggest challenges, and what's that journey been like for you?
It wasn't an overnight thing. It simmered for a couple of years before I ended up doing that. It started off, it was an augmentation to the income that I was getting. And also a lot of the growth was word of mouth. You can advertise all you want, but it's really the users being happy with a product before, you know, they'd recommend it or buy again. So so it was a lot of focus on the quality of the thing as well, the quality of the packs. So when I work on the sounds, because there's a lot of free stuff out there. You can go to Sound Mondo, there's other competitors as well who do the same thing. So my only point of difference is this has got to be enough to convince a person not to buy from them and buy from me. So, and that entails actually learning the songs and knowing the songs that I'm going to put in the packs. So I developed a bit of a routine. Whenever I'd be building a pack, I'd spend a good day just listening to the song over and over. Mm-hmm. Whether I actually jot down notes or have mental notes, okay, these are the sounds that I have to work on. How important, you know, I would rank the sounds I hear in a song. So, okay, there's a signature sound that you can only get with this keyboard. You're going to have to, you know, actually program that, okay, this is a preset that I can just tweak and that sort of thing. And then I program the sounds and later on put them together. And not only that, I have to think of how this is actually going to be played live. Mm-hmm. So if I were to play this, how would I set this keyboard up so that the performance was seamless? Because not everybody's going to have the instruction manual with them when they're at the gig. So I have to make it as easy as possible so that for as long as you know the song, you can play it. And that's how that works. So that's a lot of the thinking goes to that. And of course, I got to show people that it is playable by making the demos. And I started off with just, and you'll see it with if you go to YouTube and check out my earlier stuff. It was just my iPhone. I hooked it up. I hooked up my iPhone. I'd prop it beside me, and I'd play the song. And then later on, I've had a better setup. I have a top camera, and you can just actually see the sounds being played. Mm-hmm. But essentially, the end result is for you as a keyboard player. If you're getting those sounds, all you want to do is play on stage and actually enjoy the music. Take that part of actually having to program. I can focus on just learning the song and just playing it. And and ultimately, you're there to entertain, you know. And the guys who buy the sound, they tell me, hey, Francis, some people would come to me and tell me how good I sounded. So, great. I'm really happy that it worked for you, because that's what it's for.
And you're right. I mean, entertainment's the core of it. And I mean, you've continued to entertain yourself, Francis. So you're still, as you said, in a band that you've been in for a lot of years, playing wedding gigs. You're a busy gigging player. What sort of music are you now playing? I imagine it's highly varied, being wedding
material. Yeah, well, I have my regular band. We're called Salacious. So we've been around since 2012. We started off just doing mostly R&B. And then later on we got the wedding into the wedding scene, and that's most of the clients want that sort of music. A lot of the Alicia Keys, a lot of the older Michael Jackson ones, and that sort of genre. And I also joined a group called the Baker Boys, so every now and then I get called and do a gig. And it's an interesting concept, because sometimes I'd show up at the gig and I don't know anybody at the
interrupt there, Francis, because this is fascinating. I went to a wedding a few months back where the Baker Boys played, and I'm aware it's a totally rotating roster across, is it multiple states? You're based in Victoria.
Yes.
I'm based in New South Wales, and I saw the Baker Boys on the south coast of New South Wales.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, so, and I can vouch for the fact the quality. I don't know who's responsible for choosing the musicians overall and the audition process, but such a high quality band.
So they'd have the front men. So they're the singers. Most of the time, they're also musicians. They'd also play an instrument. And they'd have their preferred musicians. And since I also have my other band, usually I'd get the fill-in stuff. And I'd show up in the list, and whoever agrees to do the gig first gets the gig, essentially. So I'd show up, and then I'm sure you've seen some of my posts meeting the band for the first time. So yeah, that's exactly what I do, because I don't know what songs are gonna get called, so I gotta be prepared, or as prepared as possible. Sometimes it's just impossible to prepare for these gigs. I did a gig once, and we did a 50s medley, you know, Johnny B. Good, sort of thing, a lot of Elvis. And then later on, we did the Spice Girls. And then we did Linkin Park all in the same set.
Wow. And that's what stood out for me. Sorry, and I'm sorry to interrupt again, but I mean, at this wedding, I think it was in the second set, they did 45 minutes of just, you know, a couple of minutes of each other. They must have knocked over in 45 minutes, 20 to 25 songs just in that bracket.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. Astounding. And it keeps you on your feet, because sometimes you really don't know what's going to happen. And some of them have worked together for so long as well, and you're the odd man out. And, you know, so do you have a list? No, no, we'll be fine, you know, that sort of thing. If you walk in there, I think, yeah, just play along. And, okay. And sometimes they call in the chords or at least give you the key. It has happened where I had to learn the song as it was being played. Or wow. It happens wherein they're playing already and you still have no idea what's happening. So it's it keeps you on your feet. Sometimes it's a live, you know, it's a live audience. You've got a live audience and it's a game of name that tune. And you just have to play it and get the rest. So that's... Well,
I was going to say, Francis, I think the next logical question then is what's the preferred rig for these situations? So you as a regular gear, what do you take with you to give you the best chance?
Well, I've always been taking my Kronos. The Kronos 1 has always been my go-to keyboard. Every now and then I'd have a second keyboard, whether it's just a controller. So sometimes I'd split my Kronos to have a second board and have a different sound on that played through the Kronos and the Kronos itself. Or I'd grab one of the Montage, or I'd usually have a different board at the bottom and on top. But my go-to, if I had to choose just one, it would be the Kronos. And because of setlist mode, you do have a Kronos as well.
I'm a previous owner, and Paul's definitely play. Yeah, Paul's a Korg man.
Right.
Yeah. I don't use the Kronos now, but I've used them often. Yeah. Backline and that sort of thing.
It's setlist mode that really stands out, because I think the most important feature of any keyboard, if in live especially, is the ability to choose your sound as quickly as you need it, when you need it. That moment you have to have it. Now, back in the 90s, you had your you know 32 or 64 patches on your keyboard. It wasn't such a big deal, and you'd have your set list written down, and you'd probably have your patches written down as well beside the song names, right? So you know, it's like A16, that would be, or A13, that would be electric piano or whatever. And now the keyboards are more sophisticated, but the sound selection hasn't really improved with a lot of them. But the Kronos has actually addressed that. They've produced setlist mode, and you can organize your sounds according to your show. And it also enables you to write down your charts in the board itself. So that enabled me to take more gigs, because I can confidently refer to just the keyboard. If a rogue song gets called, okay, I've got the sound for that. I even have the charts for that. Mm-hmm. So it all boils down to how many songs can you play now? If you have to, so the board itself already has the stuff in it, so that's my go-to.
And as a player that's played a lot of gigs yourself, I mean, are there things that you'd like to pass on to, say, younger players just coming into the industry? You know, what have you learned that you go, if I had my life to do over again, this is how I'd approach it differently?
Learn as many songs as you can. Keep your mind open to different styles. You know, I started off in a glam rock band. And we know how the songs go. You've got three chords. They're probably majors and minors. That's it. And it wasn't until I graduated from uni and started working that I even opened up to the idea of listening to jazz and blues and playing beyond your majors and minors and going through the, you know, your chord extensions. And that's when it actually became fun, is when I started learning those stuff. So don't be bogged down by what you think is cool, and open your ears to other types of music. And and that'll open up your playing as well. And you also hear this, I don't know if you have, but we all are in this group called the Keyboardists in Cover Bands.
Yeah.
And I'm sure out there, there's the Keyboardists in Original Bands. And they would probably have this condescending look, and, oh, you guys just play covers. But I can confidently say that a cover band player is probably a better player, because they've actually learned songs as they were played. And I go by the, you know, imitate, assimilate, innovate, right?
Love it.
So, and when you play in a cover band, you learn the song exactly as it is in the recording, but as you keep playing it, it evolves anyway. You end up, you know, injecting your own style. And it's funny, when you've freshly learned a song versus you playing it years and years later, it almost sounds completely different when you compare it, because you've injected your own flavor to it and your own style, and the entire band would have lent their own styles to the music as well.
Yeah, I think sometimes that happens completely inadvertently too, just by osmosis, the process of, as you say, of playing it over a period of time, and you can't help but inject a bit of your own style and personality into it. So yeah, really agree with you. Great advice there. Now, we have a question we love to ask all our guests, and I'm sure you can regale us with a good story. In all your time of live gigging, what's your most memorable train wreck, something that just did not go right?
Oh, yeah, it was early on. It was like my first big show. So we were in my high school band. We were just playing glam rock stuff. I didn't know any other songs. And the drummer had a contact who was actually a pro singer, a up and coming singer, and he had a concert and asked me to play. And so it was the first time I was learning songs other than the stuff that I had. So I had my charts and all that. And there was one in a freak key, like a G sharp, something like that. And I hate, you know, I don't like, it was very uncomfortable to play at that key, in that key. Yeah. So I think every keyboardist has gone through this. It was your typical transpose disaster. Ah. And it's all right while you're playing the song, and you always forget. The next song I was doing the intro, and yeah, it was a train wreck. That was it. That would have been the one. And it happened every now and then after that as well. And that's another reason why I love the Kronos, because that doesn't happen on a Kronos, because the Kronos, you can transpose the actual set list slot. Yeah. And we've all been through it as well. Like, you know a song by heart in a certain way. You can play it blindfold. You can play it, you know, with a keyboard and back. And the singer goes, "Oh, can we drop it a couple of tones? And mm-hmm. can we play mm-hmm. it in D?" Mm-hmm. and you're like, "I'm not going to learn this in a different key. I'm going to play it the way I've always played. I'll just transpose it." So yeah, that's why I love the Kronos.
Yeah, good one. And yes, we did get quite a few transpose stories, and Paul and I both lived that one ourselves. Yeah.
I think everybody's
all been there.
Yeah. Another one was I used to play in a band where I had backing tracks on my keyboard. I recorded the backing tracks on the keyboard itself, the Chord Triton Studio. I had two singers. And my advice was never put the start stop button beside your sustain pedal. So I used to trigger my switch using a pedal, and yeah.
Now that's one we haven't heard before. That's great. I love that. So one MIDI CC message to cause disaster.
Yep. You start a song like in the middle of something else, or stop the song while everybody's into it.
So, that's great. I love that. That's excellent. And one of our other regular questions, Francis, is tagging a keyboard player. So you may not be that aware of who we've interviewed before, but that's fine as well. If you had the choice of hearing the life story of another keyboard player, who would you be interested in hearing?
I don't know if he's in the group. He's the demo guy he's the Korg UK demonstrator. His name's Luke Edwards.
Oh, he's a fabulous player. Yes.
He's an amazing player, and he just knows how to show off the keyboards. And pretty inspiring, actually.
Good suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah. So if you can chase him out, that would be fantastic. Because you know how these keyboard companies, when they do their demos, right? It's always some random thing. They never actually play covers. For some reason, they're afraid to breach copyright or whatever. You know, I think it's silly, but Luke just plays the song. He plays the songs and exactly the way it's played. He has this wonderful rendition of the Rocky training montage. And it's just like, wow, that's inspiring. Yeah.
So, yeah, he's got some great videos. He's got a really good one. I think if it's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom theme on the Korg Chrome, he's very, very good.
Yeah, he had one of Batman as well.
And
I think he's responsible for a lot of the sounds in the King Korg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great keyboard.
Yeah.
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 Fantastic. Thank you. So our next standard question, and we did give you a little bit of notice here, Francis. Your five desert island discs that you couldn't live without.
That's hard. That was really hard. Yeah, I give it some thought, although I guess Maxwell, the R&B singer. And of course, the stuff that I grew up with, you know, I mean, the 80s stuff, the same stuff that I make sounds for, they're the ones, you know, your ahas and Tears for Fears and all that. That's just that. Those are the songs that got me into playing in the first place. New Order, Depeche Mode, that sort of thing. And of course, of late, you know, I listen to other stuff, but I guess if you just had a few to choose from, that would be it.
Great. No, good picks. And I'm sure you'll give me the leeway. I'll just put in particular album titles based on, like, for your aha, it'd have to be Hunting High and Low and stuff like that. I'm sure you'll trust me to put in the right ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the particular songs, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
It wasn't really albums. Because when I got into music, a lot of the albums I actually owned were stuff by Poison, Guns N' Roses, Van Halen, of course. Van Halen, you can't miss Van Halen. And Van Halen is the reason why that band had a keyboard player. They were Mr. Big, you know, we'd play songs by them, even though there weren't any keyboards in some of the songs and you just had to make it up. those were the days when, you know, songs like, Enter Sandman was the thing, yeah. And then soon after that was Nirvana. So songs with no keyboards, but yeah, we play songs where there were keyboards in it. So your Bon Jovi's and your Van Halen's got played.
No, that's great. Yeah. No, good picks. And our final question, Francis, is the quick fire 10. Well, it's actually 10 questions, but just very short answers on some topics totally pertinent to keyboard players. So it's Paul and I will just fire ones at you and just answer as short and sharp as you can.
Mm-hmm.
First question. Stereo or mono?
Stereo. Or at least hear it in stereo.
If you can't.
Yeah, great one. Sitting or standing?
Sitting. Depends on the music. I used to stand all the time when I was doing the rock thing, but now I'd rather sit down.
Cool. Keytars, sexy or an abomination?
Only if you're fit. You can't play a keytar if you're out of shape.
Agreed. That's why I don't. Transpose button or adjust on the fly?
Transpose. I don't want to calculate on stage. I want to have fun and play the song. Yeah.
I'm with you. Whatever gets the job done, I reckon.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. X stand or any other kind of stand?
That's because I've got more stands than keyboards, and I've got all shapes and forms. And I would go for a neck stand if it was a one keyboard gig, and I would do that if I have a Kronos one. It's just an ultimate what is it? Their ultimate 1000, whatever it's called. But any other gig with two keyboards, it's got to be either V stand or a Cullen stand. It's always a play on. Sorry, it's a long answer, but it's always a play on cost, stability, and the aesthetic.
Yeah.
Right.
Well summarized, though. Yeah, we often talk about the perfect stand still doesn't exist.
And portability, sorry.
Portability, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So last gig you attended as an audience member?
Oh. It was a wedding. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
How good was the band? Were the band any good?
They were good, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It was probably just another lineup of the Baker Boys.
Could have been.
Very good.
Best thing about live gigs?
You just enjoy yourself. Well, we do weddings. So essentially you show up, you get fed, you play for a few minutes, go back on your seat. You're part of somebody's big day. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And you made it special for them as well. So you have that feeling that, hey, I was a part of your special day, and I was
Guy.
part of the joy that was spread that day.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Worst thing about live gigs.
Oh, packing up and actually getting there and setting up the usual, it's all worth it. It's all worth it in the end.
That's good. And name one thing you'd like to see invented that would make your life as a keyboard player easier.
I don't know. Helium powered keyboards that lift themselves.
Now that's actually great. That's one of the
Yeah,
best answers
push a
ever.
button, the balloons fly. I
Yeah,
don't know. Somebody loaded from your car to the stage, I guess. Yeah. Other than that, no, I think keyboards are do what they're meant to do.
okay, last question. Red keyboards, yes or no?
I was going to say I could see one there in the background.
There you go. That's your answer.
There it is.
Yeah, definitely.
The Nord stage is a monster
Yeah, I've
keyboard.
got the red Kronos and the red SV1, so.
Oh, there you go.
And the red Kronos was purchased just because it was red. It was pure gear lust, that
And is that the gold or just your original Kronos to your left?
one. So I've got the original Kronos is downstairs in the
Yeah.
closet, and it's ready to go when I gig. And I've got the gold. This is the reason why I had Narf sounds, because I had to justify that. And then I've got the white Montage. So I am a sucker for. So when a company comes up with a special color and everybody goes, it's nothing. It's the same keyboard. It's just a different color. And it's me frothing in the front of my computer wanting to buy it. I want that. So.
Well, like I said before, it must work, or they wouldn't do it. So clearly it works. People
Yeah,
must
it
like the
works.
colors. Yeah.
It works.
Great stuff. Look, Franz, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. And as someone that's actually about to put some money into some NARF sounds, because I'm sick of trying to come up with my own sounds, and I hear your demos and realize they're 10 times better. Thank you for what you do in this regard, and I'm glad it's worked out to be something you can do for a living as well. That's even better, let alone out of Australia. So yeah, pleasure talking to you,
Thanks for that. Yeah.
and here's to an even brighter future.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's nothing new that I'm saying, Paul, but I enjoyed that.
Oh, it was great. We say this, it feels like a cliche, but A, what a nice guy. B, really interesting to get his perspective on where his business, his journey moving into the business, how it's grown. And as we discussed, how much value is he adding to keyboard players around the world and probably saving them a lot of time in the sense of, as anyone who I'm sure 99.9% of our listeners know, the playing of the song is only a small part of the task. It's getting the sounds right is so hard. So it's wonderful we have people like NARF Sounds and others who can help us with that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, Francis is the second. I mean, Jim Danick is the same. The stuff he does with Backstage Pass is just incredible.
Exactly.
And I can't think of a better way to spend my money than with guys like that. So, yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, and it's worth just repeating, David. And I know you said this at the outset before we spoke to Francis, but to be really clear, this is not a paid plug.
No.
We interviewed Francis because we just think there's value, and he's an interesting guy with a cool story, and it's a different perspective on
That's right.
keyboard playing. But we're not being paid a cent to just say,
No.
hey, we think this is really cool.
And if for some reason we are lucky enough to be paid one day, we'll absolutely disclose
We'll
it. Yeah,
tell you.
we're certainly not one of those sort of podcasts. Yeah,
No,
so
no.
no, very happy to. So yeah, and I also just wanted to give a quick shout out to our gold and silver supporters on Patreon. So we've got the Core Chrome user group run by the brilliant Greg. We've got Brother Paul Brown from the Water Boys is a supporter. Thank you, Brother Paul. He's out on tour with Mike Scott at the moment. And some of the reports I'm hearing is it's going down very, very well. And also Tammy Catcher of Tammy's Musical Stew, a great Canadian radio show that it's got about 30, I apologize, Tammy, more than 30 episodes on the clock. And if you just, it's like the good old days of, you know, having a retrospective radio show that covers some of the songs that you love on a particular theme. Cannot recommend it highly enough. And then finally, the Music Player forums, musicplayer.com forums. I know I've been a member since 2000. Paul, you've been there a long while as well, and we love hanging out there as well. So thank you all for your support. We'll be back again in a fortnight or so, but just a reminder, you can keep in touch in the meantime via a few means. Our website is www.keyboardchronicles.com. You can contact us on Facebook at The Keyboard Chronicles and on Twitter at The Keyboard CHR1. And if you like good old-fashioned email, then as always, drop us a line at editor@keyboardchronicles.com. And you can also obviously comment on our YouTube versions of this show. We love replying to comments there, and we've been getting a few of those lately. If you would like to become an official supporter, we do have a Patreon account where for the price of a coffee a month, you can help us go from strength to strength. The benefit of being a patron of Patreon is you do get extra bonus content. Paul and I just uploaded some bonus content just today. So if you'd like to be part of that, just go to patreon.com/keyboardchronicles. And then most importantly, or second most importantly, a huge thank you to you, Paul, for joining.
Oh, thanks for having me, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
And most important, and I don't think you have to thank me for having you, because I feel like we've moved in together in a sort of the odd couple sort of way.
Yeah.
You're not coming over for dinner anymore. You know, you're helping make dinner. So
excellent. Well,
and you're probably a better cook than me too.
Oh, I'm definitely not better cooked than you, but yeah, make sure there's beer in the fridge and I'll be around there in a heartbeat.
That's right. And most importantly, thanks to all of you out there for listening and watching, and hope to see you back here next episode. Yeah.